Welcome to The Organic Guy Podcast. I am your host, The Organic Guy. This is your home of organic conversations where I get to host various thought leaders across the organic movement. Today, I am super, super excited to host Mr. Alfred Grand, who is an organic farmer as well as an entrepreneur. Mr. Grand is the managing director of Vermigrand and also the owner of Grand Farm, a certified organic farm in Austria since 2006. Mr. Grand is also involved in various projects, including being a member of a mission board for soil health and food. He's also a board member for Regenerative Organic Alliance, is an ambassador for AIP Agri, is also part of a Lighters Farm project, among other projects as well. Mr. Grand, thank you very much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, looking at your CV per se, you've been heavily involved in the organic sector for the past several years. So you can just give us an overview and highlight on how you got yourself into the organic movement in the first place.
Okay, yeah, well, I was born on a family farm here in Austria, about 30 kilometers northwest of Vienna. Yeah. Which is quite a flat area, so it's not the typical landscape that you would expect from Austria, like the Alps or something like that. Yeah. And when I finished school, I have a very basic education, so I never visited a university or a college. Yeah. But when I finished my professional school, in the last year there was the topic of composting was arising. And because the lower Austrian government, the regional government, decided to separate the organic waste fraction from the solid waste fraction. Yeah. And they announced that the farmers should do the composting and later on spread the compost on their fields. So that was my initial contact really with composting. And then I tried to find out what would the best method be to compost, to do thermophilic composting. And yeah, what I ended up was vermicomposting, because just by accident, it always popped up. This was just really at the beginning. It was about 25 years ago, the beginning of the internet. Yeah. And when you type in compost, then it always vermicompost popped up. So yeah, I always ignored that. But later on, it was there was written on the screen, vermicompost, the best compost in the world. Yeah. So that was got my attention. So I slipped into vermicomposting, and then I was more or less trained by these earthworms because I have a very basic education. I didn't know anything about soil health and what is going on in soil.
Yeah.
So because I didn't know anything, I went to the university and asked these guys, the researchers there.
Yeah.
And so that raised my interest for soil, for organic processes in the soil and so on, and later on for organic agriculture. So that's how I stepped into the organic farming. And in 2006, then I decided to convert to organic farming on the farm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's very interesting that you know, you dove direct into the side of soil, because most organic farmers really have this huge emphasis on the soil as well. And it's interesting that your first contact to be involved in the organic sector was also in the area of soil. So maybe you can elaborate to us a little bit, because I saw you are also heavily involved with earthworms and, of course, vermicomposting. So, yeah, you can just give us an overview on what you've learned so far working with earthworms, for example, and why such a kind of microorganisms maybe in the soil are also very important into contributing the health of the soil.
Yeah, when I was in school, what we were explained is that soil is like a sponge. So it sucks up the water that you pour in or that rain is bringing.
Yeah.
And you add some nutrients like mineral fertilizer, and then the plants grow, and then they take out the water again, and they take up some nutrients, and the amount of nutrients that you transport away from the field, later on you just bring it back the same amount, and then you have the same level up again, and it works the same the next year. So yeah. This was my understanding before I got involved into research and academic information. And then I realized that it's much, much more. And this behavior that was established in the agricultural sector for nutrient management was more or less kind of wrong.
Yeah.
Or at least not, it's not everything. So there is much, much more. And then I was informed about, I still remember when the first question I asked the soil professor,
yeah,
a friend of mine, and it was, I'm sorry for asking this question, but it was a little bit weird for me. And so I read on the internet that roots exudate substances to the soil and feed the soil microbes. Is this true? And he said, yeah, clear, that's true. It's a scientific thing, and it's a very natural thing, and in science we know that. And but I said, okay, but why don't I know that? Because in school nobody told me about it.
Yeah.
And so I was really worried to ask this question because it sounded so weird. So why should the plants feed the microbes? It's just like, is it really true? But then I found out there's much more activity in communication between plant roots and soil microbes, and there is so much benefit within this cooperation.
Yeah.
So it really helps to have healthy soil and later on healthy plants, and at the end healthy people feeding on that.
Yeah, it's also something I noticed on your farm. Especially the area of research as well. So there's a way that you've been able to incorporate your farm to involve research, of which you mentioned research is also very important, but also there's an aspect of demonstration where we get to transfer knowledge, for example, to farmers. So, and it's something that you have done on your farm. Maybe you can also explain to us why you think that connection of research and demonstration is important, and what are some of the things you've seen, maybe the farmers who have visited your farm, the researchers who have come to your farm, have been able to add to the knowledge transfer?
Yeah, we started the research with vermicomposting. So that was really the start of our activities.
Yeah.
And later on, when we realized how important it would be for the soil, then we converted the farm to organic agriculture, and we started to do research there also. And what I was involved in a lot of different research projects, and every time we finish a project, researchers as well as we as producers, we say, we should do that much more often, and we should cooperate much closer, because the benefits for both stakeholders are super important. And then I wanted to start a research farm. So I wanted to provide the infrastructure of my farm and of my company to research and to the scientific purpose. And I decided to make a research farm. But then I realized, okay, there is a lot of research going on, but there is not a lot of impact coming from research in practice. So a lot of results never end up at the farmer's level. And farmers are not really informed about the newest research. When I talk to colleagues, then they say, I didn't know about this and I didn't know about that. So it's only for enthusiastic guys that they are really involved that they get this information. So therefore I decided not only to make a research farm but as well a demonstration farm also. And what we do now is we do not only do conduct demonstration activities for our colleagues, for other farmers, but also for a whole society, for children, for students. So we try to demonstrate the work that we do, or we try to demonstrate the research that we do to everyone.
Yeah, so maybe you've seen some improvements. So for example, when you invite, I'm assuming maybe you are inviting young people into the farm and they can come and demonstrate. So you've seen some traction in terms of people interested in organic farming or farming in general.
Yeah, even if they are only interested in food, because they need food every day to consume, they get more information on the farm, and they can start to understand how many different perspectives are involved, how many different things like climate change or the loss of biodiversity, and how that is connected with how you can suppress the loss of biodiversity, for example, with organic farming, and how this is also connected to the economy of the farm, or even to societal problems like soil erosion, which cost a lot of money to the society at the end. And if you can prevent that and work together, then there are a lot of benefits coming out, and therefore we are trying to have a more systemic approach, so not look at one specific characteristic like yield, but also at the same time see how we can, at the same time when we produce something, how we can mitigate climate change, how we can adapt to climate change, how we can stop the loss of biodiversity while producing food.
Yeah, I personally think it's an interesting concept, because now when people actually see it, maybe when they read it in a paper and then they come on the farm and they see it, so there's that more traction and they feel, you know, this is actually happening and I can do something about it. So that's a very interesting concept that you're implementing on your farm. Another interesting concept that I saw you also implementing is about the market gardening. So maybe you can sort of elaborate to us what is market gardening and why do you think that idea is very, very promising?
Yeah, market gardening is growing organic, seasonal, fresh vegetable, herbs and fruits on small land, mostly by hand. So there is, in most cases, there is even no tractor involved. It's very tiny fields, like half a hectare, 5,000 square meter, or maybe 10,000 square meter, something like that. Produce is sold mostly directly to consumers or like to restaurants, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's super promising because it's a very systemic approach. So it really covers a lot of different topics. And we compared that according to the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. And what we found is that we have an impact sometimes less, sometimes more.
Yeah.
But we have an impact on 11 of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs.
Yeah.
And this is huge. And this is really what we are trying to find at Grand Farm for research and demonstration. So our aim is to say, okay, we want to find, we don't have to invent the wheel every time, but we want to find sustainable or regenerative and resilient methods to produce food. And we want to implement it on the farm. Then evaluate it together with science and see how it works, if we can improve something, how we have to adapt it to our soils, to our climate, to our region, to our market, and then do some research on that. And then when we have that, then we demonstrate it to colleagues, to farmers, but also to the society, to show what can be done, what could be a sustainable solution for food production for whole Europe or for a specific region.
Yeah.
And market gardening really is one of the best things that we found.
Yeah, it's, I also find it a very interesting concept, because I grew up in, for example, the rural parts of Kenya, in the Western Kenya. And, you know, basically I could also see similar concepts. So for example, people in the village could come together, and then there's a particular farmer growing local African vegetables where they could come and then pick up, and then maybe the farmer could supply to them. So from that perspective, it's a very sustainable system where you know that you're going to get this particular product from this particular farmer. So it makes things very, very easy and very sustainable as well. And then on that point, you also sort of started a vegetable delivery service. So basically, some can argue that it's sort of similar idea, but you know, you're providing maybe something from 40 to 50 crops, vegetables, different vegetables to farmers, or maybe people who subscribe to that vegetable delivery service. Yeah, since 2019, what are some of the lessons maybe you've learned from it? Other farmers who might want to implement such a system can be able to learn, or to maybe you can share with them what are some of the challenges that you've seen so far and maybe some of the successes you've encountered.
Okay. Yeah. We thought for a very long time how we can implement such a system. And in 2019, we started to do it. So we hired a group of young people. We now have a team of up to 10 people in total, with including two volunteers, which work on the farm.
Yeah.
And most people are not working full 40 hours a week, but maybe 15, 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
And so what we learned is, on one side, it's a super complex system. So you really have to learn. You really do learn a lot during the establishment. And I think it would, to have a running a successful business with some experience, I think would need 5 years till you can say, okay, we did this and we tried this. And so establishing something, and then you still have the weather condition changing and the market changing. So it's something where you definitely will, it's a lifelong learning, like farming is always, but it's super complex. So it's really challenging. And what we would recommend anyone who starts something like that is go out, see, visit a lot of market gardens, check them out, work with them for at least a month or two, and visit as many market gardens that you can.
Yeah.
So you get more and more experience and see what farmers are, what gardeners are doing, and what they do wrong and what they do right.
Yeah.
So this is at least, and then try to plan as much as possible ahead.
Yeah.
But be convinced it will be definitely the plan won't work out as you tried to figure it out in theory.
Yeah.
What we have seen on the other side is, at least in our region, it was quite easy to reach the consumers. So we were really surprised how much interest we had. And when we started to fill our first boxes in October, November 2019, there was no idea about COVID. So when COVID started, then the interest even gained a lot again.
Yeah.
But it was really a lot of interest also before COVID.
Yeah.
And so that's what we learned. Then I think it's a sector that is quite young, even if it's old, but it's still super dynamic. And and what we learned is to cooperate.
Mm.
So we have now, we started with a cooperation out of a master thesis from a neighbor, farmer girl.
Yeah.
And she did a master thesis, and she wanted to start a cooperation between 5 market gardens.
Yeah.
And we did that, and she did her master thesis about that. And meanwhile, we are 25, 30 people in this cooperation group.
Wow. Nice.
So it's really, really nice. And what we right from the beginning agreed on is we won't see us as competitors, even if we are close, nearby. But we will see us as cooperation partners, and what we definitely want is not to try to get the customer from the neighbor farm hired as our customer.
Yeah.
But what we want to do together is raise awareness on a consumer level, so we will get more and more consumers willing to be our clients or our
Okay. Nice. Yeah. And good to see that, of course, there are some lessons, and nothing you start is immediately going to be successful, but then the best part is that you get to learn from it. Speaking of successes, Austria is one of the countries that are doing very, very well in terms of organics. And yeah, right now you have up to about 10% of organic market in Austria. And also you are among the top five countries that, you know, per capita consumption of organic, you are among the top five countries. So just from, you know, you are in the market already. So from an outside person who's trying to view in, what are some of the things that you guys have really done very well over the years that has enabled your market to grow that fast? Not, you know, not from market perspective only, but also from the farmers also wanting to be part of the organic movement.
Okay, that's a super interesting question, and I think that will a lot of people within the European Union will ask that question, because the aim of the farm to fork strategy is to have 25% organic share in farmland, and that's what we already have in Austria. So we have 26% of the farmland is now grown organic or cultivated under organic regulation, and organic is a real successful story that that you know, here in Austria. So it started in areas maybe 20, 25, 30 years ago for where they had dairy on pastures. So because for them it was really easy to change, to convert to organic, because they didn't spread any mineral fertilizer on the pastures, because they had the manure from the cows and they didn't need to apply any pesticides. So it was easy for them to say, okay, now we are convert to organic. And from there, some food retailers jumped up, some supermarket chains jumped up, created brands, and started to raise awareness on a consumer level. And that was quite the beginning for people, because then they have access to a broad consumer audience, and they started to raise awareness. And what happened then, what was it was like... later on, it was more consumer-driven than it was driven by politicians, because consumer demanded more organic food when the awareness was starting to raise. And they demanded more organic food, so the price level was always quite high. At the same time, BioAustria was established, which is an organization for organic farmers, which has now about 15,000 members, I think, in Austria. And this, I think, really drove the movement, because farmers then have seen, okay, it's more nicely, because I don't have to spray pesticide, I don't have to apply mineral fertilizer, so I have a cost reduction on this side. And I have a better value for my produce, so I get higher price. So price was always two times higher than conventional. And even if you had maybe a reduction in yield, you still had a much better income. So a lot of farmers started to convert, and this was the reason. And now large farms, large arable fields farms converting, wineries converting, fruit producers, orchards, farmers are converting. So there is a lot of movement, and still there is still a lot of interest from Austrian farmers to convert to organic.
So primarily what you're saying is it was more of consumer driven than maybe government policies.
Yeah, it was still not unfriendly government policy for organic farmers, but there could have been done more. But at the end, I think it was really consumer driven, which was not, which was initiated by the food retailers. Because the food retailers started to do some commercials and some advertisement, and they raised awareness for food, for food quality, for farming, and so. But then it was really the consumer who demanded more products, and the retailer have seen, okay, There is not only interest in organic milk or butter, people are also interested in organic bread, organic vegetables.
Yeah.
So from there, it's really started to roll out.
Yeah.
And it was a huge success. And now we have a good independent consultancy in organic farming. That's also something really different to conventional agriculture, because in conventional agriculture, you have the consultancy from the industry.
Yeah.
So the fertilizer producer, the pesticide producer, they consult farmers. And there you always have a kind of a financial interest in consulting. So it makes more sense if the farmer buys something.
Yeah.
And in organic farming, consultancy is more independent
because
there is nearly no product to sell, because nutrient management on our farm is only done by cover crops and crop rotation, for example, and we do not apply any pesticide.
Yeah.
So there is no business for the industry.
Yeah, it's very interesting you mention about the, you know, part of the success of organic in Austria really being driven by the consumers themselves. From a policy perspective, did you see something change that maybe aided the growth of the organic movement?
Yeah, I think there was some help from politicians, especially in deciding how to structure the Austrian GAP, the Austrian Common Agricultural Policy sector. So there was some benefit for organic farmers, and that definitely helped also farmers to convert faster.
Yeah.
And now you get, for example, for the first years, you will get some subsidies to help with the certification process and things like that. But most of the time it was really market driven, because farmers have seen they can have a better profit on one side. And there was always a little bit of claim that the old organic farmers always said, yeah, but the new ones, they are only interested in the money, and that's why they convert.
Yeah.
But every time I've seen a farmer where I thought, okay, maybe he's more interested in the money than in the health thing and the sustainability topics and regenerative. And so after visiting a few courses and lessons, then they were really enthusiastic, looking at the soil and starting to think differently than before. So maybe even if they converted for a profit reason, later on they converted with their heart also.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think at least when someone has that heart and maybe an idea of wanting to do something differently, so you should sort of welcome them and incentivize them to be part of the movement. And then so that then leads me to ask you a direct question. I think you mentioned it earlier about the European Union. You know, they have a strategy of having about 25% of the EU land being organic by 2030. Right now, it's about 8%. What do you think of the strategy? And do you think it's the right idea to go? I mean, what is your opinion about it?
Yeah, well, as an organic farmer, I say sure it is. It has to be. There is no way around.
Yeah.
We have to increase the organic sector.
Yeah.
At the end, after, let's say, 1, 2, 3 decades, after 10, 20 years, we have to convert the complete agricultural sector to organic. On one side, yes, it's possible to feed the world organic. It's not a problem. We just have to change the way we consume. On one side, we have to reduce the food waste or food loss. We have to reduce the conversion to animal protein. So we should consume more plant-based proteins. And then it's easy even to accept the yield reduction, and we could easily feed the planet, so that's not the problem. And as you already mentioned, how it works in Kenya, small scale farming is feeding 75% of the world population, the global population, and it's not what some big companies state that we feed the world. No, it's not true. The world is fed by small-scale farmers, and that's the truth. And if we can convert them to organic standards and help them also, and that's what we see on our research and demonstration farm. Also, we try to develop method, but we try to evaluate method and try to make them more efficient together with science. And this is a know-how that we can later on provide also back to other farmers. And so we can increase yield, we can increase resilience of our systems. And I'm sure we can easily feed the world in organic. So 25% is not enough. But it's a good start.
Yeah, it's definitely a good start. And I think it's a good concession to make, because on the other hand, you know, of course, you're going to have some opposition to it, and it sort of makes sense. Plus, given the kind of numbers we have, I mean, about 5 countries in the EU have more than 10% or 25% of the target, and then I think it's a good motivation also for other countries to sort of look up to and make sure, I mean, pull their socks up and trying to reach that particular target. And I think it's pretty much achievable as well. Another area that we just need to touch about is about regenerative organic. I mean, you are a board member of Regenerative Organic Alliance, and maybe you can let us know how the idea of developing the Regenerative Organic Alliance movement start, and then you can sort of explain us what do you see is the difference between the Regenerative Organic Alliance movement with the current organic movement that you are involved in.
I think the organic movement is a good start, because you have regulations, you can certify your farm, your produce on a certain level. But at the end, the USDA organic regulations or the EU organic regulations are, in my opinion, are not enough. So it's not everything is covered, and the levels are still left some room to improve, let's say this way. And the Regenerative Organic Alliance is an initiative which was started by Patagonia, the clothing company, and Dr. Bronner's natural cosmetic company from North America, both based in North America, and the Rodel Institute, which is a research organization also in the USA. Yeah. And they started to get together and say, okay, organic is fantastic, but still it's not enough. So we want to see more improvements, and we want to see them within 3 pillars. Yeah. And pillar 1 is soil health. So soil health should have a high focus on within the regenerative organic certification, which is short called ROC, ROC. And then there is animal welfare as a second pillar, and our social standards with farm workers, for example. Yeah. So these are the 3 main pillars where Regenerative Organic Alliance says we have to improve. Yeah. We have to improve the organic sector. Yeah. And what this has done so far is that there is a standard already, so you can certify for regenerative organic certification. Yeah. And there are 3 levels. So there is a bronze level, a silver level, and there is a gold level. Yeah. And this is really maybe the highest standards that we have in organic farming worldwide.
Yeah. And then did you see the need to separate the Regenerative Organic Alliance label from the general regenerative movement? Was that the idea, to sort of separate yourself from the normal regenerative movement, or what was the idea behind it?
It's just a level up. So the what you need to if you want to certify your farm for regenerative organic, and let's say for the bronze standard, the first year to start with something, you have to have the organic certification already. Yeah. So this is the basis, the ground level is the organic certification. Yeah. And then you can top up and say, okay, but I want to be better, or I'm better than just organic because I'm doing making additional improvements on my farm, especially with these three pillars, soil health, animal welfare, and social standards.
Yeah.
Then you can apply for the bronze level or for the silver or for the gold level. So it's really a top up. You need the organic certification to start.
Yeah.
And from there you raise your levels on the farm.
Okay. Just before we wrap up, I'd like to get some predictions. Like what is your feel with the current movement of organic, the organic movement, and where do you sort of see the organic movement the next 5 to 10 years?
Good question. I think the organic movement is in a good way. It's globally, it's quite tiny.
Yeah.
We have to say, if we think about Africa, Asia, then it's not the biggest movement. It's not the super trend.
Yeah.
But in Europe, in North America, there is a big gain in attraction, and more people, more and more consumer are demanding organic food because they see there is less pesticide involved, less damage on the environment, on the planet. Also for climate change, for example. And so I'm very optimistic that this will start on will increase on one side, and on the other side there is not really a way around, because we need to move, we need to act, we need to do better on how we work, how we live on this planet, and therefore if we want to provide a healthy planet, if we want to hand over a healthy planet to the next generations, we definitely have to move forward, and organic is an important step towards this goal. I think organic farming.
Okay, looks like the future looks good for the organic movement, and super excited to eat and to continue being part of it as well.
Only agree.
Thank you very much for joining me in this particular podcast. It was a pleasure, lots of wisdom, and I'm sure a lot of people will find this conversation very, very helpful and helping us provide us with insights on what's going on in Austria as well, and some of your personal work that you are doing, which I find very, very inspiring and insightful. So thank you very much for joining me.
Thanking for the invitation again, and it was a huge pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.